Good morning, Tony.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah.
Excited, like many other people at the moment.
It's been a bit cloudy the last couple of nights, but I know that there are many people who have been able to look out the night sky and see some rather strange and wonderful colours that normally we wouldn't see this far south. Of course, I'm talking about the Aurora Borealis, or laymen speak, I think they're called the Northern Lights.
That's right, yes, the Northern Lights. Aurora Borealis, by the way, is known as the Light of Dawn, and I think it was a term coined by Galileo way back in 1623.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, why are we seeing this down this far south now?
Very good question. First of all, if any of your listeners are not sure what actually causes the Northern Lights, they appear in our sky when highly charged particles from the sun in the form of the solar wind flow across the solar system. I mean, the solar wind is there all the time, passing by Earth and going on out, you know, beyond. Mm-hmm. But when they are accelerated down our magnetic field lines into our upper atmosphere, they excite the particles in the upper atmosphere, and that creates the light that we see. So those are the Northern Lights. And just recently, just a few days ago, there was quite a large solar flare that erupted on the surface of our star, and that accelerated an increased volume of plasma, what we call, these are these highly excited electrons, into space, and they came hurtling towards us. They take about two days to reach this planet normally. But because of this flare, there were many more of them, and they accelerated towards our planet. They were converged into our magnetic field, so inside the bubble that protects us in the magnetosphere, and many more of them hit our upper atmosphere. And because there were so many of them, they actually radiated down a long, long way. So normally, you know, they would really only reach sort of the northern parts of Russia, Canada, the Scandinavian countries. Mm. It's quite unusual to have them so far down south. But they were sighted as low down as Cornwall and Kent, which is just amazing, isn't it? We had cloud here, so I'd love to have seen it.
I really would have loved to have seen it, because the photographs I've seen have been fairly spectacular. I know that normally, of course, as you said, it doesn't come this far south, but of course, northern Scotland, I think, is one of the places where sometimes you can see it, but you normally have to travel off to, was it Finland and Norway to actually see these things?
That's right, yes. Norway, Sweden, Finland, Alaska, Iceland in particular is pretty good as well. But residents in Kent and Cornwall, Cambridgeshire and Shropshire, they've all reported seeing green, pink and purple skies. Mm. And of course, what gives rise to those colours is whereabouts those excited electrons from the sun actually hit the atmosphere. So between sort of 200 to 250 kilometres up in our atmosphere, there's abundant oxygen. And when those electrons hit the oxygen molecules, they give off a red light. Up to about 150 kilometres, there's many oxygen molecules again, and the density is much higher, and they give off a green light. And I think you probably saw, Tony, in many of the pictures,
it was green,
the predominant
and red
light was green. Mm. And then below 100 kilometres, you have nitrogen molecules, and if they're excited by these electrons from the sun, they'll give off sort of blue, violet and pink light, and hydrogen molecules too. They'll also give off a sort of pinkish red light. So that's where the colour comes from. It's where it's hitting the molecules in our atmosphere. It excites them. It sort of vibrates them. And when it vibrates them, they give off, they sort of radiate light, and they radiate it in certain wavelengths that we can see. But I mean, actually, the sun is exciting molecules in our atmosphere all the time. But it normally gives off ultraviolet light, which of course is invisible to our eyes, so we don't see them. It's when they excite them in another range of the electromagnetic spectrum, as we call it, that's when we get to see them. And it's just stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a wonderful natural phenomenon, I think, really.
Yes, definitely. I've yet to see it.
If you're lucky enough to see it, wonderful. Most people pay a fortune to go up to the north of the planet to go and see these things.
They do. But you know, actually, Tony, you know, even this far south, we may be quite lucky over the next couple of years because the sun's activity ramps up over an 11-year cycle. We've still got another 2 years to go before it reaches the peak of that cycle when you can expect to see a lot more activity. So to see this kind of activity already could be an indicator that we're going to see a lot more activity, even as far down south here, in the future. So the next 2 years could be quite exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It should be good. Does any of this, just as an aside, this is all natural nature phenomenon, not anything to do connected with the discussions going on about the environment and climate control or anything like that? Nothing to do with any of that at all.
No, it is just the activity of the sun. But of course, you know, space weather is now classed as being on the national risk register because it can create problems for things like our power grids and our satellites and indeed aircraft. You know, increased activity, what we call solar storms, can be, you know, definitely cause disruptions on this planet. I mean, way back in 1859, there was an event called the Carrington event, and this was where an enormous solar flare was released from the sun and it knocked out the telegraph systems. It even set fire to paper in offices, which is pretty amazing, isn't it?
It's incredible what happens.
It is. And of course, you know, it can cause widespread disruption. I mean, way back in, I think it was 1989, a geomagnetic storm, as we called it, left some, I think it was about 6 million people without power. And the Apollo astronauts also narrowly missed being exposed to deadly radiation way back in 1972. So, and of course, you know, for the crew on the International Space Station, solar flares are a definite risk. So, you know, they have to sort of take cover as well.
Well, this is nature at its finest, I think, really. It's not necessarily the nature of Earth. It's nature of the universe, which is astronomy so such a fabulous thing to take a look at. Because one of the other things that's going on, it's perspective, I think, which is something I know you're very good at putting things into perspective. There's a conjunction of Jupiter and Venus coming up next month, isn't there? And it makes them look like they're very close together, but of course, they're actually a very long way apart, aren't they?
Yeah, and actually, Tony, the conjunction is this evening, so we don't have to wait a month. It's happening tonight. So
this is the two planets,
Jupiter and Venus. So Venus, for any of your listeners, I'm sure they may have already seen that there are two very, very bright points of light. They look like stars in the west at night, quite low down, but they have been unmissable. And for those of you who have been watching them, they are appearing to converge. They're getting a lot closer. And tonight and tomorrow night, they will appear to be really close together at twilight.
I've seen one of these planets, and I don't know which one it is, either Jupiter or Venus, in the sky, in the west, reasonably low down, but it's been sort of flashing away like goodness knows what. Which one would that be? Very, very bright.
Yes, the brightest one will be Venus.
Yeah, and it was flickering.
Yes, that will be our atmosphere, actually, Tony, that makes the light twinkle. These two planets, you know, they usually sort of meet each other. And when I say meet, obviously Venus is closer to the sun than we are, and Jupiter is indeed much, much further away from us. Venus is that really hot planet, about the same size as us, an Earth-type planet. But Jupiter is a giant gaseous ball, much, much further away. But as you look at the night sky, they are appearing to converge on each other. Now, they usually meet once a year, but not every time they meet, not every what we call a conjunction is a close one. And sometimes when they do meet, it happens in daylight hours. They had a close encounter way back in April 2022, and they're going to pair up again in May 2024, but they're going to be far too close to the sun for us to observe them. And again, the same thing happens in August 2025. They'll be appearing closer together again, but they'll be twice as far apart as they're going to be tonight. Because tonight, they're only about half a degree apart. And 1 degree is the width of your thumb held at arm's length. So if you can imagine that the two of them are going to be half the width as close to each other, it's going to be an absolutely stunning sight. And it just doesn't happen that often, because the next time it's going to happen will be 2027, and it won't be as good as this one. Yeah. So you need to be looking.
So you put the perspective in place of sort of the width of a thumb, which I kind of like. But the other thing you've answered is the question that I've been asked before now is to do with the brightness of the planets and the flickering. And you've said that the flickering might actually be to do with the atmosphere, which is quite a logical thing when you think that when we were talking about the Northern Lights, they're not steady, they move, which is something else. But what about the light and the brightness when you mentioned because of the sun? I mean, are they much more visible to the sun at this time of year to make them look brighter?
Or is not really. Well, yes. I mean, yes, it's a very good question, because perhaps your listeners might not be aware, but Venus actually has phases like the moon. So, you know, the moon has we have a half moon and a full moon. Mm. Well, Venus has the same, because, of course, Venus orbits our star, orbits the sun inside of our Earth's orbit around the sun. Mm-hmm. And as it passes around the sun, certain parts of the planet are illuminated by the sun. So sometimes it's fully illuminated and sometimes it's only partially illuminated. And at the moment...
So it will appear at different sizes to the eye or to the telescope looking
exactly
at it.
Not exactly a different size, but a larger area will be illuminated. And for this conjunction, Venus is about 85% lit. So it's going to be very, very bright. So, of course, yeah, I mean, it's when I do the presentations, actually, Tony, as you may know, it's always a staggering thought to think, isn't it, that stars produce their own light, their own heat and light, which is why we see them. But planets are only visible because they are reflecting the light that they receive from our sun. So, for example, Earth is visible because of the light that it receives from the sun. If the sun wasn't there, putting aside gravity requirements, if the sun wasn't there, you couldn't see Earth because it doesn't give off its own light.
No, and
I'm
guessing that the complete power of the national grid wouldn't make any difference in terms of light, really. I mean, you see these night pictures and, there's bits of the world sort of lit up. But, I mean, I'm guessing the further away you go, the less and less strong those lights get until they're invisible at the kind of distances we're talking about there. There's another conjunction, isn't there, as well?
Yes, there is. I just need to mention quickly, Tony, if it's cloudy tonight, don't fret, because tomorrow night, those two planets, Venus and Jupiter, will still be relatively close to each other, a little bit further apart, but still close. So well worth stepping outside. And if you don't see them, you need to be getting up early tomorrow morning, because Mercury and Saturn are about 1 degree apart from each other as well when they rise in the morning. So there are another two planets to look at. It's very, very busy at the moment.
And of course Saturn's got those rings as well, which makes the vision all the more spectacular. Now, before we go on to some other bits and pieces, I'd like to talk to you about something that a lot of people get confused, because March sees the spring equinox and it also sees the clocks going forward. One represents the start of the astronomical spring, and the other, has nothing to do with anything other than changing the hours of daylight.
Yes, as I understand it, certainly I can vouch for the spring equinox, and that is the moment that the centre of the sun crosses what we call the celestial equator. So if you can imagine our planet, and then if you can imagine like a grid system on our planet projected into space, and you've got the equator, so we have the equator around Earth, project that into space, and we call that the celestial equator, and the spring equinox, or vernal equinox as we call it, is when the sun crosses that equator from south to the north. So it's appearing back, it's coming back into the northern hemisphere. And it normally happens between March 19th to the 21st every single year, and it's going to happen this year at 9:25 on the 20th of March.
Does that mean we'll be able to see some of the objects flying around in the sky? Because I know over the winter it's been very difficult. Haven't seen anything flying over, satellites, those sorts of bits and pieces. Does it mean we'll see more of them as the sun moves into the northern hemisphere?
Yes. Well spotted. Yes, it does, because of course it's, you know, the angle of our planet and the angle of the sun, and in the summer, if any of your listeners are looking out, they'll easily see that you can see many, many more satellites at that time of year, because they are, because of the position of the sun and the tilt of those satellites, their solar panels do reflect more of the sun. Mm. And it is to do with the position of Earth tilt and the position of the sun.
Yeah, I've missed seeing the space station go over.
Yes, I haven't seen it
in a little while. So it'd be nice to welcome it back sometime, maybe late March, early April. Earthshine is another thing.
Yes.
I've got it written down here. I have absolutely no idea. Explain to me what it is.
Well, I've mentioned it, Tony, because it has been absolutely stunning recently, and it always is about this time of year. And earthshine is when sunlight, so you're looking at the moon, quite simply, when you look at the moon, particularly if like the lower part is illuminated, sometimes, at certain times of the year, you can actually still see the rest of the moon.
Yeah.
And if it's really clear and dark, you can see what we call the mare, the dark areas, the seas on the moon. So it's, you know, the different patterns. You can see them. Normally you can't, it's too dark. But there are certain times of the year that when we can. And just recently, it has been amazing. And it's caused by sunlight. The sunlight is reflected from Earth to the moon and back again. So it's our light from our planet that, you know, we've been hit by the sun. So the light from our planet is being reflected to the moon, and then it's reflected back again. And because of the light on our planet, it is our light that is reflecting on the moon, which is why we can see the rest of it. I mean, isn't that absolutely stunning when you think that the moon is sort of 250,000 miles away?
Yeah. It's very clever. I mean, you can step out in and look at the night sky. Over the last few days, there's been this sort of banana-shaped moon. It's a quarter moon, I do believe, is what it's called. But, yeah, you can see the rough outline of the rest of the moon.
Yes, and you can only do
it's very
that.
Very bright as well, what you can see.
It has been stunning lately, Tony. Mm. Absolutely stunning. I can't really recall it being so good for quite some time. And it's being illuminated by sunlight bouncing off of our planet onto the moon. Isn't that incredible?
So all these things you never think of. You stand there in wonderment, look at these things and wonder how they happen. Mm. And you just wander along and just explain the whole thing. It's absolutely wonderful. Put such clarity
important.
To it.
It's important for everyone to know. Look up. Look up. It's beautiful. You know, we're tiny. We are beyond tiny, and it's amazing what is out there. It's just the best perspective of all. And sometimes, you know, that night sky is absolutely stunning, the things that are happening out there. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, just as an aside, I see that the full moon, I think, is in about a week's time or so, something along those lines. But I don't know whether it'll be any brighter this month than normally because of Earthshine. Do you think it might be?
Could be. I mean, it's, you know, it's dependent as well, because certain parts of our planet are brighter than others. So, for example, a desertscape shines very brightly. So it has what we call a high albedo. It's very reflective.
Yeah.
But if that's pointing towards the moon, it's going to reflect more light. If we have the oceans, like the Pacific is pointed towards the moon, they absorb the light, but they don't reflect as much. So their albedo is much, much lower. So they're not going to reflect as much light, so there'll be less earth shine. So it depends on the position of Earth at the time as well. And, of course, the conditions. If it's very clear and dark and, you know, unpolluted skies, so not light polluted, you're going to see a lot more.
Yeah, okay. And very quickly, because time passes by in the blink of an eye, I know there was something, and it's connected to the moon as well. It's going to be close to Antares. Now, again, I need some enlightenment on this. Antares and close to the moon. What are we talking about?
Okay, it's a very good question, Tony. Yes, so on Tuesday the 14th of March, now you need to be up about midnight, and actually you need to be up preferably about 2 o'clock in the morning. And if you happen to be outside and you can't sleep, you need to look up, because the moon will be 60% lit, so it'll be pretty bright. Mm-hmm. But it's only going to be about 1 degree to the east-northeast of Antares, which is, and so now what is Antares? It's what we call a red supergiant star. It's an enormous, enormous star. It glows orange. It's in the south, and it's in the constellation, what we call a group of stars called Scorpius, and that is shaped, it's a pattern of stars that's shaped like a scorpion with the tail sort of flicking upwards. And in the middle of that constellation, so if you can imagine a scorpion, mm-hmm. you can imagine the position of his heart. Well, that's where the star is, right in the position of the heart of the scorpion. So Antares, stunning, absolutely stunning, a bright orange star, and the moon's going to be close to that as well, relatively speaking.
You've certainly set the tone and the flavour for looking up in the night sky this month, because there's an awful lot there. And I know there's an awful lot that we haven't talked about that's on the calendars for events to happen in March. And I think it's just a case of get out there, take a look. And if you're not sure, ask somebody who does know, which is why, of course, you're always welcome on this show. Jane Green, it's been a joy, as always, today to talk to you. Thank you for talking to us, and come back and talk to us in a month's time, please.
I will do, Tony. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Cheers, Jane.